seasoned wood. A man was chained to the wall. Within easy reach on a nearby shelf was a jelly jar full of water and a tin platter stacked high with roasted human hands.
No. Never. Can't make me. Never eat. Stinking canny freaks.
Slapping the plate away, Ryan drew his blaster and blew the chains off a wall. The prisoner recoiled from the blast and retreated into the corner. Ryan stayed where he stood.
It's okay. We're not them.
The freed prisoner dared to peek out from behind his hands and cried out in delight.
Lord Ryan, you have returned at last.
Then the elation drained from his gaunt features, and he slumped to the floor, openly weeping.
Oh, no. I've gone mad. This is only a dream. Why don't the bastards just kill me? Kill me!
I know you.
Ryan dropped to a knee.
A hunter from Shuresville, one of the shantytown hamlets near Front Royal. David, Daniel, something like that.
Daffer. Ryan, is it really you?
Daffer. It's been a long time.
As gently as he could, Ryan took the man's hand and helped him to his feet.
Indeed, it has been.
The bedraggled man smiled faintly, shuffling from foot to foot, as if ashamed of his condition.
Clem, go get Mildred.
The hunter dashed out the door. Minutes later, the physician charged into the cabin and jerked to a halt, staring at the hellish objects hanging from the rafters. Forcing her attention away, Mildred went straight to the man and checked his vital signs. She fingered the back of his neck.
He certainly hasn't been fed in weeks. How long has it been?
Don't know. There's no day.
Daffer pointed at the sealed windows.
No night. A year. A month.
Hush. It's okay now. You're safe with us.
Mildred took the jelly glass and offered it to him.
Here, drink some water. It will help with the stomach cramps.
Never!
He knocked it away. The pre-dark jar shattered on the floor, the glass shards scattering.
What was in that?
She watched the thick fluid slowly seeping through the cracks in the rough-hewn floorboards.
Some muddy brew.
Daffer wiped his mouth.
The stuff makes you hungry as hell. Once you eat, the cannies own your soul. It's a thing they do to newcomers. Makes him one of them forever.
An initiation. But you didn't drink a drop. Takes a real tough man to do that. The Baron will be proud of you.
Breathing heavily for a while, Daffer stood straighter as he fully considered the matter.
I did refuse. Told them to go to hell. And they did. I never ate. Never.
Hush.
Mildred unscrewed the cap to her canteen.
Here, drink my water. Fresh from a creek 100 miles away.
She took a long pull on the container to show it was safe, then pressed it in his grip, but maintained a tight grasp.
Don't swallow the first sip. Swish it around in your mouth and spit it out, then take only small sips. Drinking too fast would be very bad for you in this condition.
Lord Ryan?
Do as the healer says, armsman.
Ryan intentionally used the ancient pre-dark word for a loyal warrior. He had heard his father use the term only twice, and it was always reserved for special sec men whose favor he wished to curry. The man visibly calmed with the honor, and did as ordered, sipping and spitting until Mildred allowed him to drink freely.
Bless you all. Are the Kennys dead? There's one big man with a scar. He's the leader. Watch out for him.
The Kennys are dead. Come on, I'll show you.
He took the man by the elbow and helped him walk to the front door. Daffer paused at the sill as if a door were there. Then, with a determined face, he stepped over the jamb and outside the log cabin. Mildred followed them closely, ready to catch the man in case he fell. Blinking against the strong daylight, Daffer struggled to focus his vision, then smiled widely as he spied the bodies sprawling in the dirt, more than one face displaying its ghastly filed teeth. He growled at the corpses.
May the worms choke on your rotting flesh.
Turning clumsily, he stood at attention and saluted.
As my father did before me, I swear again my allegiance to you, Baron Cawdor, ruler of Front Royal.
Brian deliberately didn't return the salute.
I'm not a baron, never was. My nephew, Nathan Freeman Cawdor, rules Front Royal.
Nathan?
The man slowly lowered his hand.
You don't know then, my lord?
We heard of trouble at the Ville, but nothing more.
Mildred put away the canteen.
Has there been a fight? Did it burn down?
The Ville is fine, never better.
The soft forest wind brushing his hair, Ryan braced himself for the worst.
Is Nathan dead?
Oh, no, Lord Ryan. The Baron is alive and well, both of them.
Both?
Clem scratched under his furs.
Got a son, does he? Good. A baron needs kin, like a rifle needs powder. Ain't no use without them.
A son? A son? Yes, but it's not his son. It's yours.
Mine?
What are you talking about?
Front Royal is still ruled by Nathan. And by your son, Overton Cawdor. Come home from the Deathlands.
A layer of mist lay over the ground, with the low hills breaking the cover like islands in a sea of smoke. Not far from Front Royal, the companions stood amidst some trees and watched the abbreviated version of the convoy roll down the cracked asphalt of the road, winding toward the east. The truck in front was packed solid with tents, blasters, horse tackle, crossbows, clothes, boots, and other assorted supplies looted from the cannies. Even the blaster racks on the walls had been taken. Not a single item of value remained at the ambush pass. Chained behind the truck was the cargo van, and in the rear van Sarah was at the wheel, and Hector cradled the baby, as she was the one who knew how to drive. On the horizon was a collection of pre-dark houses and buildings. Mixed among the old homes were new log cabins and battered concrete structures resembling pillboxes.
Is that Front Royal?
Dean lowered the Navy telescope.
No, just one of the hamlets that surround the Ville.
Ryan compacted the scope and tucked it into a pocket.
There's a ring of small towns surrounding the fortress. River, Benton, Brown, Linden, Cheryl. They act as a buffer zone against invaders.
The fortress at Front Royal is farther down the road.
Doc sat on a log beside their small campfire. He was holding tongs and melting lead in a tiny crucible.
Quite a sight it is, too. The stone blocks are weathered a brownish yellow, so it appears to be made of solid gold, like some mythological abode of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table.
Wow!
A patched canvas tent stood behind Doc, the flap wide open so the heat from the fire could gather inside and help them stay warm at night. Before burning down the log cabin, the companions had looted the place of everything useful, including the tents, although the decorations on the tent poles were the first things to go. The armory had been a treasure trove of blasters and ammo, with enough different calibers to fit the weapons of each companion. Everybody was fully armed again. Naturally, there had been nothing for Doc's oddball 44 LeMat, but he had convinced Clem to upgrade to a bolt-action Enfield rifle and took the hunter's supplies of black powder, cloth, and lead for himself. The mini-balls wouldn't fit his small 44 caliber wheel gun, but lead was lead, and he could make ammunition from anything that melted. In a nearby clearing, Jack was cutting branches and using them to cover the second truck, which was now their property in exchange for the loot from the cannies, now riding in the first truck. With the companion staying behind, Stephen was short on drivers, and more importantly, they would need a wag to rendezvous with Mildred at midnight. Christy agreed from under her blankets inside the tent.
The fortress is very impressive. The turrets rise so very high in the sky that...
Go to sleep.
Duck carefully poured the molten lead into the aluminum bullet molds he always carried, and topped off the bag.